VolitionRx, a multinational epigenetics company revolutionizing cancer diagnosis with the development of simple, easy-to-use, cost-effective blood tests involving a range of cancers and other diseases. Volition's clinical trials in human health have shown promising results in detecting several cancer types, including colorectal, lung, and a variety of bloodborne cancers. VolitionRx. Web address, volition.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Ryan Avent of The Economist magazine, writing for as trade and international economics editor. We're discussing the early 21st century. Early. I understand historians that 100 years from now will look back at this as a blip. But Ryan has laid out facts that are alarming because they explain this falling away and the possibility of instability. Ryan, the facts are China and the pandemic. Pandemic and China. Back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
The pandemic nobody saw, but it came out of China. It's as if there's a playwright here, Ryan. An economy of seeing. So let's begin with China. Can we see in the numbers as early as, say, 2015, 2016, that China is changing direction? Can we see that?
We definitely can see that. I think you had Xi Jinping assume leadership of China early in the 2010s. I think there was a lot of hope at the time that he would be a reformer who might do some things to keep the Chinese economy liberalizing and growing. But as it turned out, over the course of the decade, China really seemed to become much more interested in self-sufficiency. Producing more within its own borders, and so it wouldn't have to import as much from the rest of the world. This is one of the reasons that we saw a slowdown in trade growth. I think it's one reason that China hasn't grown as fast this decade as it did in the 2000s. But it's also a major reason, I think, that the prospects for a lot of other poorer countries who wanted to kind of repeat the Chinese experience and hoped to have that level of growth haven't been able to do as well as we might have expected that they would.
There are some notable moments here. Vietnam benefited from China's change of heart, and other countries we can name in, I believe, East Africa, and even in Central Europe, there were some countries that enjoyed the supply chain offset from China. But it's the domestic market in China, if I read you correctly, Ryan, that is the great disappointment. Was that purposeful, or are the Chinese just cautious about buying everything?
I think a lot of that is purposeful. And what we're talking about here is partly, I guess, the fact that China's grown a bit more slowly, but also that the level of consumption in China is well short of what is sort of normal in the rich world, and even normal among middle-income countries that are similar to China. And I think that's a policy choice. That the government has encouraged more investment and not as much consumption, that it's kind of suppressed consumption in lots of different ways in order to kind of plow as many resources into new investment as it possibly can. But that's ended up being something that's harmed a lot of other countries around the world.
Now, the joy of the Economist presentation. I discover a new term. I love this, Ryan. It's from Danny Roderick of Harvard University. Ryan, what is premature deindustrialization?
It's a great term. It sounds like something you definitely don't want to have to talk to your doctor about. It's this idea that he's had, and I think it's backed up by data, which is that over time, countries that have been growing by learning to industrialize and export more, have sort of run out of room to do that, to develop their manufacturing sectors and export at ever lower levels of income. So, it used to be 100 years ago when we were talking about Western Europe or Japan industrializing that they would keep on developing their manufacturing sectors until they got incomes to a pretty high level, close to a rich world level. That's fallen over time for a few reasons. We've had better robots that have sort of made low wages less of an attraction for companies that are looking to manufacture in various poor countries. Globalization, I think, has contributed as well. But what it means is that if you're a poor country in Africa, or in South Asia, and you want to kind of try to repeat the experience that China had, you're not going to be able to get as far with it. You're not going to be able to raise your incomes as close to those of the leaders as those countries did. And so it really spells not doom exactly, but a much, you know, more bleak outlook, I think, for the poorest countries in the world.
Now the trouble, and we always look for the sharp end of the stick, Ryan. The pandemic arrives. There was already, in other words, you're establishing, there's already a trend in place to flatlining or declining in growth for the BRICS. And the pandemic arrives, perhaps as a product of globalization, perhaps an accident, a black swan. That'll be determined by our successors, the historians of the 22nd century. But in any event, the sharp end of the stick is political instability. That generally describes the 20th century. Is it back, Ryan? Can we tell yet?
Well, you know, I think when you look around the world, you sort of have to say that it is making a comeback. You know, you hope it's not going to be something that, you know, becomes a sort of a persistent feature of the landscape. But we, you know, you had in the 2010s, you know, higher inequality, both in the rich world and then also within poorer countries, you know, related to globalization. You had this slowing growth in economies and the sort of diminished outlook. And then on top of that, you had all the stresses of the pandemic, which a lot of poor countries have struggled to manage and still struggle because they don't have, you know, the same access to vaccines that we do. And that's showing up in unrest. It's showing up in people taking to the streets, you know, people throwing out, you know, their leaders and replacing them with worse ones. And I think it's, you know, it's a real source of concern because you just can't have sustained economic growth, if you don't have order in the streets, if you don't have responsive governments, if you don't have a climate that's going to attract investors.
I pick up a handful of bad outcomes. There's a drought. There is right now a spike in prices, food prices. There is the global concern about inflation. Perhaps it's temporary, perhaps not, but we're still inside a pandemic, or as you write at the Economist, Delta Blues. And then there's this other thing, climate change. The climate change expectations by the rich countries are that we're going to reduce our emissions. But if I understand correctly, that also must include an offset for the poorer countries because they must continue to depend upon energy resources that are unacceptable, coal being one of them. So are we looking at the upper limits of globalization? Have we peaked, Ryan? Is it too early to say that the rest of the century will be either catch up or decline?
Well, I don't want to make too many claims about the entirety of the century. I think looking at the sort of lay of the land and you know, climate change again is another piece that kind of makes you feel a little bit more pessimistic.
We have about 1 minute, Ryan. Go ahead.
Sure. I think what you have to say is that it's going to take some luck and it's going to take some really bold action, both in the rich world and in poorer countries if we want to try to get back to a better place where poorer countries are growing. I mean, I think that the way I think about it is that, you know, the richer you are as a country, the easier it's going to be to manage climate change. And so the poorest countries are really in a hard place where they're going to be hit hardest. They're going to be the least capable in terms of their economic strength to adapt. And because of that, may never get the opportunity that China had to catch up.
So that China's example of what happened between, say, 1990 and 2010, that will be the gold standard that people can dream about for 1,000 years. Well, that's a bad number. For 100 years. Ryan Avent of The Economist magazine, looking at the facts so far of the 21st century. He is trade and international economics editor. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.